This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Federal funding for the arts is again the subject of debate in America. The Republican leaders of the House of Representatives would like to abolish the National Endowment for the Arts. The arts community is mobilizing to save it. The fight over the NEA's future is raising provocative questions about the roles of art and government in American culture. In the next hour, we'll hear from both sides of the debate. The NEA was created by Congress in 1965 and provides grants to arts institutions as well as individual artists. Its budget this year is $167.4 million. In the spirit of disclosure, we want to let you know that Fresh Air receives funding from the NEA, which represents about 2.7% of the total Fresh Air budget. My first guest, Hilton Kramer, is former chief art critic of the New York Times. He left the Times in 1982 to edit the art journal The New Criterion, which he co-founded. He describes it as politically conservative, aesthetically modernist. Kramer says it's time to abolish the NEA.
My general view of funding, the federal funding of the arts, has changed a good deal in the nearly 30 years since the NEA was founded in 1965. At the beginning, I was a very enthusiastic supporter of what the NEA was doing, because I felt, certainly as far as grants to individual artists were concerned, they were going to the right people, that is, both in terms of talent and need. But as the agency has grown into a huge bureaucracy, and as its budget has expanded, I think it has shown itself to really be incapable of discharging its functions in a way that is not detrimental to the life of art in this country.
Are your main objections to the way the agency functions now, or do you object to federal funding of the arts?
Well, I'm not sure that you can today, in 1995, separate those questions, because we now have enough experience with the NEA, I mean, nearly three decades, to show us that a large government bureaucracy is really incapable of making the distinctions that are necessary to make wise judgments in the arts. Judgments in the arts cannot be made through a bureaucratic process.
The people who are making the decisions on the NEA panels are usually fellow artists, arts teachers, arts critics. They're not government bureaucrats.
Well, in theory, they are all, independent artists, museum curators, directors, and so on. In practice, the peer panel system has become totally corrupted through having become a nucleus of what are called grant farmers. And this corruption of the peer panel process was the focus of the Brademas Garment Commission's report a number of years ago, in which they looked into the peer panel process and declared it corrupt and just riddled with conflicts of interest. We all know, those of us who follow the history of the NEA, we all know dozens and dozens of stories, true stories, about panels in which, you know, artist A or museum curator A leaves the room while the rest of the panel discusses his application for money, and then they vote his, they vote, you know, the artist B, C, and D vote the grant for artist A. Then artist A comes back into the room, artist B leaves the room, and they deliberate on his application to the agency. It's a corrupt system. I once did an informal survey of artists I knew, both in New York and in Maine, where I go in the summer, where there are a great many artists from all over the country. I couldn't find one who had ever served on these peer panels. And these are artists of many different persuasions, different generations, different styles, different sexes, and ethnic backgrounds. The peer panel system is itself a bureaucratic creation.
What about what you've described as the long-term needs of culture in a political democracy? Do you think that the long-term needs require a degree of federal funding?
I do not. I think that the it's a great mistake to believe that the government really does play a significant role in the life of art in this country. The life of art in this country is determined by a great many private citizens, artists, art collectors, producers, private patrons, and art institutions that have their own standards and their own histories. And most artists I know, and I know a great many artists, most artists I know never even think about the NEA. I mean, the NEA isn't even a dot on the horizon. They remain completely untouched by its activities. The real life of art in this country goes on in a totally separate sphere from anything the government gets involved in.
Do you think that the arts should survive in the commercial marketplace without outside assistance?
No, I don't think that what I would call the fine arts are capable of surviving in the commercial marketplace on their own, and never have been. I think in a country and economy as wealthy as ours, and a culture in which the arts are so highly valued, that there's plenty of wealth to support the arts without the government agency. After all, as everyone knows, the actual amount of money that the NEA puts into the life of art in this country is minuscule compared to the entire economy of the arts in America.
Advocates of the NEA are always quick to point out that the United States actually spends far less money in support of the arts than many European countries do, and many other countries around the world.
Well, that's true, but the reason for that is that in most European countries, the principal arts institutions are themselves state-owned, but it's had, in many cases, a tremendously detrimental effect on the arts. I mean, in France, I'm told the government buys more than 50% of the contemporary paintings and sculptures that are produced in France. And when was the last time you heard of a French painter you were interested in? I mean, there hasn't been a significant French painter to come out of Paris, in a quarter of a century.
I'd like you to analyze the current political debate over NEA funding, and tell me what you think the biggest issue is in the political arena, what the political debate is really about.
Well, I think the political debate about the government funding of the arts is about several things. One is that there's a general and growing feeling of distaste about having a centralized agency in Washington determining what is to be performed, what is to be created, what is to be supported in communities all over the country. Another issue is more marginal, but it has greater power to influence opinion, and that is what I would call the obscenity issue or the issue of avant-garde extremism that the Mapplethorpe, Serrano, and other such cases. But I think that one of the crucial issues at stake in the debate about the NEA is that the feeling that the government doesn't have a legitimate role to play. The government is not a government agency, is not in a position to make sound judgments about the way the arts should be performed and supported in all over the country, in a country as big and diverse as ours is.
You're currently writing a book, I believe, A Cultural History of Abstract Art.
Right.
I'm wondering if what you're steeped in now in writing that book applies to your thinking on the NEA, if there's any lessons you think can be learned now from studying A Cultural History of Abstract Art.
Well, certainly one lesson to be learned from the history of abstract art in America is that its greatest achievements had absolutely nothing to do with government support of the arts. I mean, figures like Mark Rothko or Willem de Kooning, and in a later next generation, Helen Frankenthal or Richard Diebenkorn. I mean, those artists didn't enjoy government grants. I mean, the whole New York School of Abstract Expressionism was something that took place at a great distance. You know, a few of the older members of the New York School were on the WPA project in their younger days, but they were not there because of the way they were painting. That was a relief program during the Depression, and what has been called the triumph of American painting in the New York School is a perfect demonstration of the fact that the government had no role to play in it. The same thing is true of the great period of American poetry in the 20th century. I mean, Robert Frost, Wallace Stevens, I mean, T.S. Eliot, Marianne Moore. I mean, none of those artists had anything to do with government grants. I mean, they made their own way.
You know, one argument that's made against the NEA is that a lot of the art that's funded is controversial, and taxpayers shouldn't have to fund art that they disapprove of.
Well, certainly the NEA has funded some very appalling stuff. That certainly is not doesn't represent the majority of the grants that are made by the NEA. Only a very tiny minority of the grants, a very small number. But I think it is that small number of what we might call outrage grants is indicative of the agency's indifference to public opinion. I mean, the agency really feels it's their money that is being dispensed. They never really quite understand that it's the taxpayers' money that they're giving away, and that they, if it's a government grant, then they're accountable.
You've said basically that the NEA approach has little to do with the real life of art in American culture. Can you talk a little more about what the real life of art is?
The real life of art takes place in the lives of artists who work at their own speed, work according to the dictates of their own talents and vision. Many of them work at other jobs. They find ways to survive. Just as artists have always done in this country, just as they've did in Paris, as they did in Rome and Berlin and St. Petersburg, they struggled if they didn't have private means, and most of them didn't. And it's exactly the way the real life of art takes place today. You look at the exhibitions that are in the New York galleries. I dare say not more than 1% of those artists have ever received a penny of government money. What you see the NEA supporting now is a certain kind of socially determined art productions.
What does that mean?
Well, because the grants have gone on the basis of the either the gender, race, ethnic background, regional location of the recipients. There are no aesthetic standards that are being applied, as nearly as I can tell. The real life of art takes place among individuals who live their lives and do their work as individuals, and who are not either looking to government agency to support them, or are expected, or in many cases don't even want it.
Hilton Kramer edits the arts journal The New Criterion. Coming up, John Bradamus speaks in support of federal funding for the arts. He chairs the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities. This is Fresh Air. Hilton Kramer says the NEA's review process for awarding grants has become corrupt and riddled with conflicts of interest. He cites a 1990 report by a bipartisan commission which was asked to review grant-making procedures. The commission recommended several reforms. The commission was co-chaired by John Bradamus and Leonard Garment. Bradamus helped write the legislation that created the NEA. He's a former Democratic congressman from Indiana who now chairs the President's Committee on the Arts and the Humanities. I asked Bradamus if he agrees with Hilton Kramer's assessment of the NEA review process.
No, I do not. And I may say that Hilton was one of the few journalists who, at least in his review of our 1990 report, seemed to understand what it was that we were recommending. We were very strong in urging, that the sole authority of the chairman of the NEA to decide on grants be reinforced, and that the chairman be free to reject recommendations made by the panels. We also urge steps to reduce the conflicts, to reduce any conflicts of interest on the panels. For example, we said that the panelists shouldn't be allowed to sit on a panel that was looking at applications from organizations with which they were affiliated, and we said that the pool of panelists ought to be included, be expanded to include persons who knew something about the arts but didn't earn their living in them. Those reforms have been made, and I think it's simply not fair, not accurate, and it corrupts the English language to make the kind of charges that Hilton Kramer, with whose views I, on many occasions, agree, but not in this respect.
What do you say to the charge that a federal bureaucracy, like the NEA, is just not capable of making good aesthetic decisions?
Well, basically that's not an accurate way to make the point, because recommendations for making grants come up through the panel process, panels of persons who are knowledgeable about the arts, and therefore it's not a matter of a lot of bureaucrats sitting around deciding that we'll say yes to this one and no to that one. So I just don't think that's a fair or factually based argument.
Many of the NEA's critics charge that the NEA serves a cultural elite. What do you say to that?
Well, I would ask if it is elitist to provide funds for, say, a show at a great museum to which children are brought by their parents. I think of a recent show at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City, one of the most famous museums in the world, for the Matisse exhibition. Nearly 1 million people came to that show, and there was a special educational program for children and their parents. You have, through the NEA, seen some 14,000 artists in residence in schools all over the United States. Enormously important. We've seen folk arts programs at the NEA help support gospel singing, Native American dance, or programs for the elderly, or physically disabled persons in rural parts of New England. So to say that the NEA is solely an elitist operation is, if you will allow me to say so, nothing but an elitist argument without foundation in fact.
What are your concerns about what will happen to art and culture in America if the NEA is abolished?
Well, I think it will be a giant step back. It will be as if the United States of America, the greatest, wealthiest democracy in the history of humankind, has made a public statement that that the arts, that the humanities, that the institutions of learning and of culture don't matter, that they are of little consequence, that we are solely a materialist society with no concern for the spiritual. What we would be saying is that we have little pride in the culture of our country, and I think that's not a positive way to enter the 21st century.
You're the chair of the President's Committee on the Arts and the Humanities, and it's part of your job to encourage private philanthropy of the arts. What are you hearing from private patrons and corporate donors about if they think they'll be able to jump in and make up the difference if the NEA ceases to exist?
What I hear is very clear and very blunt. They will not be able to make up the difference. They will not fill the gap. As I myself chair a corporate foundation, I deal with these matters with that hat on. And as the pressures on arts organizations all over the United States are intense and intensifying, the elimination of the National Endowment for the Arts would not mean that their needs would be met or that the funding gap would be filled by the private sector. The public-private partnership is essential to support of the arts in the United States.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, good to talk to you.
John Bradham is chairs the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.